But obviously, we've got a generation now that has grown up on far more organic products. They're far more sustainably minded than we were at our age, or our contemporary were at his age. So what we wanted to do was create choice. We wanted to create an offer that we felt was using the best possible product in our eyes and in a lot of our consumers' eyes and loads of parents' eyes, is if we are putting less pesticides and chemicals into our children, surely that's a good thing.
It was such a pleasure speaking to Patrick and Karen O'Flaherty, and they're a husband and wife team who founded Pip Organic. And I bet you're nodding your heads there, because Pip Organic for me is, it makes me think about taking Harry out. And when we were out and about, I would always head to Pip Organic for his juices. And Patrick and Karen have just shared their story, literally from Borough Market in the rain, where they're standing there selling their juices, and how they actually came up with this idea that that was going to be their lives. And I just love this conversation, because it just highlights that so many of these wonderful podcasts that we record here is all about the niche. It's all about finding your niche as a person. And for Karen and Patrick, their lives were going to be about organic juice. So it makes me think, what's your life going to be about? My life is about small businesses. And I just love the fact that they were passionate. They've gone through the ups and downs. There's all the, you know, the stories of a classic entrepreneur and going for things, and Karen realizing that Patrick had bought the biggest piece of machinery without her knowing, and they had nowhere to put it. These stories are what makes us feel something about a brand when we pass them by and we see a logo. When you hear the story now of what it took to get that packet of juice in that cafe, you're never going to look at it the same. And so today I wish you the spirit, the bravery to find your own niche. Have a think and go for it.
Bow your head and let your eyelids close on down. Where we're going, you won't need to bring your frown.
Hi, I'm Holly Tucker, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations of Inspiration. I've reached out to founders and those who simply inspire me to share their hard-earned wisdom with you. My hope is that collectively, these remarkable realizations will help you on your own journey. I like to think of it as inspiration for life. So let's begin this week's conversation of inspiration.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Karen. Welcome to Conversations of Inspiration. I'm excited to talk about your award-winning organic food and drink brand, Pip Organic, which I know everyone listening is going, oh, yes, I know Pip Organic. So welcome to Conversations of Inspiration.
Well, thank you very much for having us. It's a real honor to be here today, and very excited to be sharing some of our story with you today. So yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Holly.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I'm excited about this, because what I love about this podcast is we can talk to amazing people from all industries and all sizes, and, you know, all their sort of different stages. And I think what I hear overwhelmingly when I meet our lovely listeners is every story helps them, because there's something within each story that resonates. And that's why it's so important that I think this podcast exists, to talk about authentic stories about building a business. And as I know every listener knows, the thing we can all agree on is this isn't easy. So we're going to start. And one of the things I wanted to ask you both before we get into the younger versions of you is how your summer was, because you're a family business, you're a husband and wife team, and you have two little ones. And I just know, you know, as founders, we don't get annual leave, or we barely get it, or we don't get paid annual leave, certainly. And kids get involved and don't get involved. How's the summer been? And how do you cope with that, sort of running the company and running your family?
I think, firstly, we are so fortunate to have an amazing team around us that, especially this summer that's just gone, we actually took quite a lot of time off. And I say we, it's probably more me, because we ended up going back to see my family in South Africa. And then Karen came back to the business and I stayed out there with the kids. It is a long summer. It is generally our, you know, our busiest operational time, being involved in drinks and in ice lollies specifically. So it is very operational. And as I said, our team around us is just absolutely world-class. So we were lucky to leave a lot of it in their hands. And, you know, we had a brilliant summer. Maybe it's because I wasn't there so much. But so, yeah, that's from our side. But it is a juggle. It's a massive juggle. And it's something that no doubt would be a thread of this discussion, how Karen and myself work together to be involved in our family and to make sure that we don't miss out on those amazing times of our kids growing up. Because when we started the business, we didn't have kids, and now we do, and they're growing up, and they grow up so quick. So it's one of those things that they're such precious moments. So I think that this summer specifically, as they're getting to the ages that they are, we really wanted to do stuff with them, be around them, you know, watching them grow as well. So,
and Karen, we're going to get into your story, but I'm assuming just on this kids front that this hasn't been, you know, how long have you been in business now?
So Pip Organic is 11 years old as a brand.
11 years old. So when it started with children, I can imagine you weren't taking summers off.
I think that, you know, it's always, as Patrick said, it's always a juggle. There's a combination of running a business, keeping the momentum going, but also, you know, you want to spend time. It's that constant battle between wanting to have the good times with the kids, but also wanting to keep the momentum and support your little child business as well. So that's, yeah, it is a juggle. But I think that, you know, we're really fortunate, as Patrick said, we've got a great team, but it's, you know, it's a lot of organization and also making sure that the kids are enjoying themselves as well, because you realize that time just goes so quickly with them and they change. And, you know, we really see it as kind of precious times. And although it's really busy for us now, in years to come, they won't want to go on holiday with us. We'll be, you know, we won't be the popular choice with them as much as now. So,
well, I want to just make an announcement here to anyone worrying about that. Okay. So mine's turning 20 and they still do want to go on holiday with you. You just got to bribe them with the best holidays. So that's it, because they become poor students. So there is this thing. So do not panic, everyone. They still want to go on holiday with you. You just got to up the holiday game.
Okay.
And they don't have to eat baked beans, you know, so it is a win-win. And talking of Harry, I think about over those years, and I was looking at, we're about to turn 1 year old, Holly and Co. And we were looking through the last 10 years. It's 10 years to get to year one of the marketplace area.
Wow.
And I look at younger Harry, right? So he must have been 9 when we started all of this. And the amount, and all my team and all of their children have been involved in Holly & Co. since some of them were born. Do you think that that's, and I'm saying, I'm looking at these photographs, putting this reel together for our birthday, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it has been interlinked with their childhood. Mm-hmm. Have your children seen the progression of your business, been involved, understand what these colourful packages are? I don't know how old they are.
So we have a 13-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Well, yeah, so they would have been.
So Charlotte's 13 now. And they're really involved, you know, sort of, and they want to get involved, which is the amazing thing as well. And sort of Charlotte's at that age now where she's desperate to, when we're doing the events, the summer events specifically, is to be involved in them. And in this last weekend, we had a little pip fest for when we were shooting some images, and we had, we were giving back a little bit to our pip fans. And you know, she was right in the mix of it, you know, right in the thick of it, getting involved with some of her friends, making sure that, you know, it's obviously moving on to new mediums now, new channels, and doing dances and but she wants to be involved. She's very proud of the brand. Will's a little bit younger still, you know, he's only 10 mm-hmm. and so a little bit shy away from it, but gets stuck in. So I think that, you know, they've been involved in the business. They see us working on weekends. They know that, listen, there are sacrifices they need to make, you know, in terms of us maybe going and doing certain stuff for them because we've got to finish things because of X, Y, and Z, but then we try and reward in other ways as well.
Yeah.
So it is difficult, but they are so intrinsically you know, involved in our business now as well.
And I would say, Karen, would you think, I mean, from my personal experience, I used to think that he was involved, Harry was involved, but actually over the years, as he's become older, I realize how it's actually changed him. It gave him an opportunity to think differently. It allowed him to see what hard work was, what graft is, pure graft. It allowed him to see how unfair things can be, but how you pick yourself up. Are you seeing some of these things coming through?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, as you mentioned, they see the hard work that goes in, that it's not just a finished product that's on the shelf. They, you know, obviously Patrick and I try not to talk about things too much at home. We try and kind of have a little bit of a balance between the two, but children are really instinctive and they do realize when, for instance, our son loves to tell everybody about new flavors that we're launching. So it's never normally a secret, unfortunately, that often. But no, they do. And I think that they appreciate, certainly as the brand's grown and as we've brought new products in, many of the products that we have within the range are actually designed around them. And frustrations that we've had as parents, you know, where we've, for instance, when we launched our ice lollies, this came straight out of being in a store, picking up a product and thinking, why do you need to put all of these things in an ice lolly? It should be really simple. I can make this at home. And, you know, and I think they appreciate the effort that we go to make something really simple, because they often kind of comment on, you know, things that they see in stores. So I think that they do appreciate the hard work that goes into things, but I think also kids will be kids, and sometimes they might come up with impossible things for us to produce. Like William still thinks that we should produce a juice that when you pour it out of a carton, it's a rainbow. You know, that's a little bit more difficult for us to do, but they certainly appreciate the work.
Well, it's a great idea. Well, talking of childhood, I want to just, if we can, just spend a moment on your childhoods and how you grew up and what your passions were. Patrick, can I start with you?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in South Africa, and I was really fortunate to live by the coast, which is part and parcel in my life now. It's still, it's one of my happy places. And again, I grew up with two grandparents who were farmers, so managed to really understand the land as well. And I think one of my grandmother was from the UK on the one side, and she came out and she decided to farm around the principles of organic. And she had a poultry farm that was effectively farmed as organic. And it was unbelievable to see, you know, sort of the produce that she produced from that farm. And we saw it firsthand as kids. I'm from a family of four boys. So we were often taken to the farm and left at the farm with granny and had to do lots of the stuff around the farm, which was great. So we learned a lot about the land. And my other grandparents were also farmers, but they were conventional farmers and actually in a valley that was doing a lot of genetically modified products, not on their farm, but on the neighboring farms. And everyone was really confused as to how things could grow like they were growing in, you know, and in a sense of, you know, it wasn't natural. And so firsthand from a very young age, I had the real opportunity to see different styles of farming. So yeah, I had all my younger days were all in South Africa, growing up a lot of outdoors, either on farms or by the coast. So I was really, really fortunate in that sense of having a real connection with nature. And also being sent off to a boarding school that was in the sticks as well. So you know, the whole time we were either out and about. So loads and loads of time being outdoors.
And so Karen, you grew up in North London, I've read. What was your childhood like? Was it a happy one?
Yes, I had a really happy childhood. As you mentioned, I was born in North London. I have three older brothers to keep me on my toes. My parents were very hardworking parents. They had a real balance, like ourselves early on, working full time and raising four kids. But no, I had a really happy time. Unfortunately, I didn't live near the coast like Patrick. So slightly different upbringing. And I had a really enjoyable education, really enjoyed subjects at school where they were more creative, that I could get involved in things, that I could be more curious. And that kind of led me really to be quite interested in making things and being more involved in the creative side of things as I got older.
And so I always love getting into husband and wife couples and how this all happens. And my husband won't mind me saying that definitely for sure would not be working together. It wouldn't last 2 seconds. But for you guys, I read when researching you that you both were, while working in London, you connected personally and it was pretty quick where you basically aligned your values, your missions, your sort of love of, well, what was the love? What was that? Obviously a love for each other, but what was the love that also sort of grew at that point?
Well, I think it was really interesting because we met, as you said, and it was, we met through mutual friends. Patrick had this really strong feeling for nature, you know, explaining, coming back to his kind of farming roots in South Africa. And I hadn't been very well in my early 20s, so was really quite focused on health and eating healthily and looking at labels and mm-hmm. organic. So when we met, we both just had this kind of real understanding of, you know, a shared interest and a shared passion in that.
It's quite young, isn't it, to have a shared interest in that, would you say?
Yeah, I think it was quite young, but I think we were both at a stage of our lives where we had met each other, we were going traveling together. We'd only been together about 6 months and Patrick's came up with this idea to travel together. And I was thinking, well, we've hardly been away for a couple of weekends together, let alone travel. And I think during that time while we were traveling together, we really, I think, you know, our kind of values kind of solidified a bit more. And we both expressed such an interest in more kind of healthy eating and healthy products that we couldn't see that in the market in the UK. But while we were traveling, we were exposed to it a bit more.
Yeah. And is this where, so was it on the travel sitting on some love? I can just picture this, by the way, I'm just picturing you on some lovely beach. Do you know what I mean? Just sipping on a mojito. I mean, I don't know, not a mojito. Can we just make something better? And it would be organic and it might not even have alcohol in it, but there you are sipping away. And this is where this the thought of building your own organic juice company comes. And I mean, some people might say, this is what people are really interested in. You know, this is like the niche. You know, there you are traveling around, but it's the organic juice business that you've decided to be in. And lots of people think, oh my gosh, how do I start an idea? Where does the idea come from? So where did this idea come from? If you had to say one thing that it came from, was it a gap in the market? You were looking for something that didn't exist.
I think we found something that didn't exist on our travels. We found that in a lot of the environments we were in, there were juice bars. There were these freshly made products, often organic, often not, in sort of a lot of the stops we made around the world. We did an around the world trip, which was unbelievable and a massive risk for Karen, as she said, in terms of like going, do I really want to go with this guy, you know, who's now, you know, been seeing for a little while and here we go off and I think her parents are also a little bit worried about it as well. But anyway,
it worked out.
Managed to convince and it was amazing. And we just found that, you know, we were eating amazingly well. We were feeling so great. And, you know, we didn't come up with that idea right, at some point along mm-hmm. the way. It wasn't a magic moment. It was an accumulation of actually, this is something that we're doing day in, day out. We are feeling great. It's something that, you know, when we came back to London, wasn't there. It wasn't here. There was basically nothing. We understand now why there weren't the juice bars, because it's a really expensive product mm-hmm. to make. And, you know, at that time, and when we started, we looked at setting up juice bars, was very much about, we were competing with some of the big coffee brands and, you know, they were getting all the amazing positions. We thought we could do that through some contacts of ours in the city. And we thought that we had sealed something. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. But we took the concept into you know, a borough market environment.
Yeah, I was going to say, so how did this start? What was the first point of PIP Organic? Because This is where we do share a, not markets, but we just share a common story. You know, Not in the High Street really started from my business called Your Local Fair, which was trestle tables selling products on them. And so you also started on a trestle table.
Well, yes, sort of, in terms of, you know, we wanted it to be something bigger, as I suppose we all do. We certainly started because we had these ideas, you know, these grand ideas about opening, I think it was 5 sites, and then had to pull it back to actually focusing on what we would be doing in a much smaller environment. But yeah, we started small. We learned about everything there was to learn about, you know, sort of juicing, and we also
and this was at Borough Market.
Yeah, but also outside of Borough Market, we were doing loads of testing at home and kitchen testing, and I think when we realized that we couldn't scale it through a juice bar environment, we realized that actually we needed to migrate it into a packaged juice world.
But if I take you back just one step, because you don't go from setting up your first pitch at Borough Market to packaging your juices. There was a bit there, right? This is the bit you glossed over, but this is the gritty bit, you know?
I'm trying to forget that.
Yeah,
honey.
You can. You're trying to, exactly. I knew you were, by the way.
Yeah.
Because I'm reckoning putting down a stand and putting up a stand. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how often you were doing it. It is tough work, and you are there. It's cold.
You're being dripped on.
Yeah,
it's raining outside. There's it's freezing. It's what are we doing? No. You're right. I tried to gloss over that.
You did. You went straight into packaging up your juices. I'm thinking, hang on a second here. We need some wet weather here. Conversation, because the reason I sort of stop you is because there is this. Again, going over these photographs of Holly & Co. turning one, and I'm just thinking, I'm looking back, and I turned around to Harriet, who's my MD, and I said, you know what? These pictures make me full, because I have lived 10 of the happiest years of my life. Look at these smiles, look at these things. But also, it was so physical, you know, it was so mentally draining. I can't even cope with what we have gone through. But those early years, when you look at those early years, people don't quite realize what goes into those foundations, you know, those little moments of talking to endless customers for yourself. Karen, I mean, it must have been, you know, not only as Patrick's saying, cold and wet and things, but constant.
Definitely. And I think that, you know, taking that step back that you said into those kind of those years, it's, I think that, you know, a learning for us is that we wanted to create a brand, you know, we wanted to own a business that was offering a healthy alternative to people. Mm-hmm. And I think those early days trying to just pinpoint something that was right, that the market was ready for, mm-hmm. that the flavor, you know, we came back from traveling with lots of exotic flavors that we wanted to bring to the market, and then realized, okay, maybe that memory that we've got in Australia having this might not be the same as trying to sell it in London on a cold November morning.
Yeah.
But yes, there were lots of early mornings, lots of mistakes that we made, lots of things that just didn't work out. We were also self-funding the business as well. That's something, even now, the business is completely self-funded. We've never had any investment into the business.
Wow.
So we used all our savings, sold cars, sold lots of things to be able to create a business that we felt was sustainable, and that we felt that we could set a scale. So yes, there were the early mornings, there were the drafty mornings, there were very long days, but it was worth it, because I think what you learn in those, you know, you learn not only things about the customer, but you learn things about yourself as well, in terms of, you know, really having that grit and, you know, being able to put that energy in.
Yeah.
Patrick, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think it's the energy bit that you mentioned earlier, in terms of you look back and you don't actually realize that you could muster up that energy now. You know, sort of, I'm not saying you wouldn't, you still would do it, but it's just at that stage of a business, it's sort of, it is insane how, you can get this energy from somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to focus in on. I think that's maybe what you're articulating is what I was feeling. Like I'm 10 years older. And if I had to, and you know, yeah, I'm sure like yourselves, but I've just started a new business. I've got a new business baby. So I'm doing 7 days a week again. Yeah. But the point is that it's a different type of energy. You know, those early first years where everything is going wrong, basically money is hemorrhaging everywhere. You have to muster up something else. It's sort of out of body. An out-of-body experience. I'm wondering if you can say that you had that naivety, which I always think is the most beautiful thing, fantastic creative naivety that, you know, you're thinking of doing exotic tastes and it, definitely that wasn't the case. But you learned about yourself. And I also thought that was a great point that I think when we get older, I'm certainly getting better at slowing down a decision. I'm still Holly Hurricane. It's still pretty quick, but I actually know that sleeping on things and allowing that process to happen does help. I can imagine even coming out of it, a silver lining out of those early days was knowing yourselves better as entrepreneurs, as a working couple, as, do you know what I mean? Is that the case, Patrick?
I think the, you know, what you've said there about the getting to understand yourself. Those early days certainly proved it in terms of understanding who we are and what we were good at and how as a team we could perform a lot better. I think a lot of the decisions, as you said, were made far quicker and that, you know, I think these things come with experience. Certainly now some of the decisions we made when we first started, we'd never do. But that naivety also gave us the courage you know, because we were slightly blinded.
Yeah, well, it's good that you didn't know things, right? Yeah, I mean, I always say if I 100%. Knew what I was getting into, there's no way I would have done it.
Yeah, but also the flip side of it is if you go in there with that naivety, the excitement of achieving something that you didn't think that you could achieve as well. So there's, it's, you know, yes, if you look back on it, certainly I'd agree with you on certain things. But then also when you were there and you're looking forward and you're excited about that ride, I think that is so, so important. I think the real big thing was the way that Karen and I were able to work together and share things because, you know, when you start, you're just doing. And then finally you start working out, actually, what are your strengths and what are Karen's strengths? And then playing to our strengths. And, you know, sometimes if you come into an industry and you've been in that industry for a little while, you might understand that. But, you know, we came into this industry cold. Mm-hmm. And so, as Karen said, we made loads and loads of mistakes. But some of those mistakes have stood us in such good stead as we've gone down on our journey. But I wouldn't want to make them again.
No, thank you. No repeating. It's a bit like, would you be 15 again? I'm like, never, ever, ever, ever. One of the things I'm most proud of at Holly & Co. is the fact that we're run by women, made by women, but open to all. Over 95% of the small businesses that sell on our marketplace are female-founded, and over 97% of our team is female, which means that every time you shop with us, you are voting with your money for the kind of world you want to live in. And by supporting women-owned businesses, you're backing the idea of flexible working, showing the next generation what's possible, and actively championing the female economy. It means that despite only 2 pence of every pound's worth of funding in the UK going to women, and women still being the primary caregivers, we are rising above and finding a new way to live life our way. You can support female-founded businesses by looking out for the badges on our website. In fact, we have lots of ways to shop by your values, from choosing black-owned businesses or socially positive businesses to products that are made of recycled material or crafted here in the UK. If you care about where you shop, discover more at holly.co. For now, though, let's get back to our conversation of inspiration. Tell me, you know, when you look at your sort of journey. You had the Borough Market, and as you said, and your customers were super positive. An organic juice market, you know, basically the organic juice area was really unsaturated. It was a new area that you were going into. You decided basically to buy your first bottling line, which, by the way, I have I sort of can picture what it is, but I'd like you to actually explain what that is, how you buy a bottling line and make a batch of drinks and book a stand at an organic trade fair. What were you thinking? Because was it competitive? Were you new kids on the block? What was your, and what is a bottling line?
So yes, going back to the point you made before about naivety, I think that we were trying, after getting loads of samplings, lots of feedback on flavors, we then tried to go to many of the co-packers and ask them whether they would pack a product for us. And rather than us, Patrick and I, sitting back and going, why are they saying no to us? You know, why is organic so difficult? We actually thought, no, what we can do is we can get our own bottling line and we can do it, because it can't be that difficult because we're doing it on a smaller scale. Well, probably 2 weeks after Patrick and I had that discussion, I came out of a meeting and I had a message on my phone and I read it and I thought, okay, this is interesting. Patrick's looking at a bottling line. So I phoned him and said, okay, so when do we need to let them know? And he said, no, I've already done it. I've bought the bottling line.
And what is a bottling line?
I'll let Patrick tell you the technical side, but from my side, it's huge. We had nowhere to store it.
Right.
And we had spent a lot of our savings on it, but I'll let Patrick tell you the rest of it from a technical perspective.
A joint decision, I can hear, Karen, decision. That was. Yes.
Hey, Holly, it was going to go quicker. I had to jump in there.
Yeah, exactly. Seize the opportunity.
The bottling line is a lot of metal. It's just lots of conveyor belts and tanks and sort of filler heads and all things that I wasn't very affair with either. We'd been working with some amazing partners to get to a point where we need to produce more. And that's where we were looking at our own factory. We were looking after we'd been turned down by a lot of the larger guys in terms of contract packing. So we then found an environment that we could place it in. Mm-hmm. That didn't come through. Thank goodness, you know, hindsight, it's a great thing it didn't, because we still had this machine. But we then managed to convince somebody that actually this machine could go into their environment and it could be their innovation hub and we could be their first sort of guinea pig, I suppose, was want of a better term. But we'd worked closely with them and we had products and we had a market and we managed to convince them. It was a lot of selling up instead of being sold out. We sold the other way. And we managed to get that machine into an environment that was absolutely fantastic and became our next great partner.
Yeah. And I love that there's another great point there, which is the managing up. So often, you know, if I use another example to those listening, when we started Not in the High Street, it came from my company, Your Local Fair, which was fairs all over the country where I had picked all small businesses to sell at. But actually, before that, it was actually I wanted to sell wreaths and I had a wreath company and I wanted to sell in a fair. So then I created the fair with no concept that I wanted to go into fairs. I just created the fair so that I could sell my wreaths. And then actually that then developed. And so it's this idea that just because the environment for your bottling machine didn't exist, you created the world where it could exist in the place by selling someone else a dream that you were the person. You know, my very unsuccessful wreath business, basically, I had to create a fair for me to have that in. Now, it sounds like a huge amount of hard work, and it is, by the way. But was the choice me not selling the wreaths? No. Was the choice you not bottling? No. So it's coming in at problems with the solution being actually creating a solution or an idea or something for someone else and then back channeling it to what you need. Now it's high labor, high intensity, high everything. But actually, as you said, it is an interesting path to go down and it becomes one of your partners that you never would have had if you hadn't have looked at your problem that way.
Definitely. It's like, yeah, no, I'll just pick up on that as well, because it was a lot of traveling to production, a lot of, you know, trying to get this right, trying to get them to understand, because what they were doing as well was what we were asking them to do is out of their comfort zone, an incredible business with massive machines doing huge runs. But then this was something that was completely different, but they felt that they wanted it. So it's exactly the same thing. We created something that they, that obviously had spoken about, but we then presented them with that opportunity the other way around. And yeah, we were so fortunate to have them as a partner to get ourselves, you know, in terms of scaling, which is such a difficult thing when you're starting out, you know, sort of, how do you move through the stages when you're scaling? And your partner today might not be the right fit for you as you do get bigger. Or if something happens and you do need to become a little bit smaller in that particular product, how do you work together? And it's about these partnerships.
Yeah. And so, Karen, relationships, you know, I did a post that really went viral, actually, you know, make friends, not contacts. And actually the idea of taking people along with you, if they're the right fit for the whole journey, you know, to become part of something. This has obviously been very important to growing the business as it is today. Basically, you couldn't have done it on your own without those partnerships. Is that right?
100% right. And as Patrick said, you know, that first step that we had with this partnership, putting our machine in somebody else's environment, enabled us to get onto the market in an appropriate way, in a way that we started to get some recognition and some reputation, which enabled us to then look at kind of different formats. And, you know, as our children were then growing up, or, you know, starting to drink the products a bit more, we were looking at them saying, okay, well, why is somebody producing it like this? Why can't we do it? Mm-hmm. So we started to really look at what the norm was, and in the kids market in particular, especially with Pip. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, we were really able to make really strong partnerships with other businesses that we have worked with for several years. And I think Patrick mentioned also the growers and the cooperatives that we work with as well. We've worked with them for a long time, because I think, you know, we try to be as transparent as possible, honest and open in our relationships. And I think that is something that we're really proud of as people, because I think us as a couple running a business as well, you know, our communication is very, very important. As a husband, wife, founders of a business, as well as, you know, running a business with our team as well, so that we have very defined roles and we work in partnership with our external partners as well.
So carrying on with your story, you know, it basically paid off. The bet paid off, and you were selling in cafes and farm shops and small restaurant chains, and then of course supermarkets, and you're now stocked in the likes of Waitrose and Ocado and Able and Cole and health stores and delis and all up and down the country. One of the things that really caught my eye, and obviously catches everyone's eye, and it has been designed that way, Holly, of course, is the packaging of your product. And I love you kindly sent the team. We've enjoyed so much, and our kids have enjoyed so well. Not my Harry; he's onto different drinks at uni at the moment. But the little ones in our office have loved them so much, and those big letters, you know, sort of act as a window for the fruit inside. And I was talking to a dear friend, Perry, who runs Big Fish, which is a great design company, about this sort of strong identity and integrity in the design. Why do you look the way that you look, and that identity? What was that? How did that come about?
So my background is actually in packaging, branding, design. So yes.
Oh, that was handy.
Yeah, it was slightly.
That was just handy, wasn't it? That little part we missed from your younger years.
Yeah. So what was kind of very interesting for me in creating my own brand was obviously to work with many of the people that I really liked and respected over the years of working in organizations. So when, from my younger years, I actually leaped from school into a work placement in a branding and design company, because I was really, really unsure of what I wanted to do, as I think many people when they're scratching their heads as a, you know, a teenager. And I was given an opportunity in a branding and marketing company. and then worked in another large international design company as well. So I always wanted to create a really fun, engaging brand. And obviously when Patrick and I then decided that we would create a business together, I had a really fortunate kind of introduction to it through my past experiences as well. So Pip for us is just a very bright, colourful, fun brand that hopefully kids engage and love, but parents also have some trust within it because there's no compromise in terms of the ingredients and the, you know, there's no nasties in there at all. So
Patrick, that was a bit lucky there. Tell me about the name Pip though, what the idea is around that.
So the name Pip derives from pips, from apple pips, from fruit pips, from fruit seeds. And our, you know, our vision for the brand was that along with the vision for our children and for all other kids was that if you nurture a pip or you nurture something young in the best possible way, it's going to grow into the best possible thing that it can be. Mm. And our whole philosophy resonated around that. So from small beginnings, from pips, you can grow into something great. And what we, you know, what we decided then was to make sure that the ingredients we used within Pip were the best that we could possibly put into Pip. And that was one of the reasons why we chose an organic fruit and veg to go into Pip, because of the lack of chemicals and pesticides that are used on organic fruit and veg. We felt that actually having that to enhance, let's say, the growth of our little pips out there, it would be the best possible way of doing
it. I just, it's simple, it's beautiful. And this is like all best ideas, I think. And when you think about that packaging, I know you had am I right in saying sort of a 3-year testing hundreds of straws to basically come up with this, the paper straw. And tell me about that, because what I love is that you have focused in on an area, and it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're just getting better and better at doing something very well. And actually that is, so you're organic, you've already looked at sustainability, you're looking at, do you know what I mean? That everything that you're doing is bettering the product. And then I'm assuming growing the market with that fantastic product. But I'm interested that why it took 3 years.
So the complexities of a paper straw, it might sound really simple, but they're
actually quite... But I love that, Karen. The complexities. Would that be your mastermind subject? Do you know what I mean? Like that you'd have like... The complexities of a paper straw. Karen, go ahead.
Exactly. Like anything, to make something really simple can sometimes be really hard. And with a paper straw in particular, to create or to work with the manufacturers to develop a straw that is has the robustness that is needed, but also has the environmental credentials attached to it as well, is actually quite difficult. And when we first started looking at introducing a paper straw, it was before the government had put signifying a ban on plastic straws in
so
the UK.
So you weren't, doing this based on that.
No, we actually had an oxo biodegradable straw on our pack before. And we were constantly looking. It's a bit like you were saying, looking at the small things that can add up to a big part of the customer journey and, you know, how consumers are kind of drinking or consuming the product. So a paper straw was always on our radar, and it was obviously accelerated because of environmental, you know, or environmental reasons that we wanted to introduce it into our packaging. So we had hundreds of different straws that we tested with consumers, with our kids, or at the office, and obviously introduced a straw onto the pack, and we're continuing to improve it.
I think, so we knew it was coming, Holly. We knew that the policy was going to change, and it was an easy win for the government to introduce the ban on plastic straws. But as Karen mentioned, we had already started that journey, you know, 4 years earlier when we had moved to the oxo biodegradable, so which is a biodegradable plastic. And so for us to move to that next stage was something that we really wanted to do, and we were the first product, first juice and smoothie product on the market that had the paper straw. But with that, you know, being a first mover on things, especially with something like a paper straw on a Tetra Pak, sometimes, you know, it wasn't going in properly. That we had the complaints. But those things, you know, those things go with being, an innovator. And as you said, it was something that we just wanted to continuously improve on.
Yeah. And this is the thing, you are innovating. So 4 years before, you're already thinking about this. Because it comes from a genuine, authentic positioning. It is actually your lives. This is what you believe in. This is what you've always believed in. And thus, you would always have a paper straw, forget the ban, all those sorts of, this is what you were working on. Can I ask you, at this point in time, in that stage, or when you began, what did you think about competitors? The different juice brands that are really big out there, and your Pip Organic. What was your thoughts on other juice brands and, you know, larger ones that we all know?
There's some amazing juice brands out there, both here in the UK and globally. What do we think about them? I think they've all got places. I think what we're trying to do as a business is we're trying to ensure we offer an organic alternative to the market, and we are allowing people that choice. We also know that a lot of parents are far more considered in their offered to their children than maybe as we grow up. But obviously we've got a generation now that has grown up on far more organic products. You know, your son's probably in that age group now they're far more sustainably minded than we were at our age, or our contemporary were at his age. So what we wanted to do was create choice. We wanted to create an offer that we felt was using the best possible product in our eyes and in a lot of our consumers' eyes and in loads and loads of parents' eyes, is if we are putting less pesticides and chemicals into our children, surely that's a good thing.
Yeah. And Karen, this must be a thing that's growing. You know, I just think about, you know, we now at home, well, my husband's a scanaholic with the Yucca app and just scans their liver, you know, anything. I got some phenomenally tasty, what was it, Heinz Monster Munch mayonnaise that's just come out, and because I'm a Monster Munch fanatic, and I don't eat a lot of them. I'm feeling like I have to say that when I'm talking to Pip Organic. And he scanned it before I'd even tasted it and told me it was one. So, you know, it was basically toxic for me. We're now, as consumers, aren't we? We're just so much more aware. You know, we are so much more understanding of our health, our bodies, what we're putting into our children. I was at a recent launch of Nude, which is a chewing gum brand, and it's a plant-based chewing gum. And I was like, plant-based chewing gum? Why would you do that? Oh, that's because 99% of all chewing gum is single-use plastic that actually is putting microplastic into our bodies. And, you know, there my mum was, well, I wasn't allowed chewing gum, but, you know, it was about not swallowing it. And if you did, oh, it didn't really matter. I'm like, oh my gosh, would you swallow a plastic bag? You know, it's so different, isn't it, in the eras now. This must be fantastic. I think there's another thing here for those listening and if thinking about it, is, you know, the seasons of life and the seasons of consumerism and society and fitting your products in. And when I started Not in the High Street, I don't think people really necessarily cared about small business. You know, it wasn't like it is today. It was actually, I think, you know, you just wanted something different. Oh, and it's made by a small business. But now I think people would purposely come to us because we support small businesses. Mm. So it really has shifted this. This must be brilliant, Karen, for your company, for your vision, for what you're going to do.
Yeah, it is. I think awareness is always something that, you know, is growing in the health, in the health area. Our central kind of purpose and mission is to make it easier for parents to say yes. So we have a series of kind of values and disciplines that we have against all of our products. And as Patrick mentioned before, we're across frozen now, snacking and drinks. So we have a kind of no nasties approach to our products. So no added sugars, no sweeteners, never any kind of nasties within it. And I think it's you know, it's important. It's something that within our business, it's a DNA, mm-hmm. but we have something called the Pit Parent Panel.
Yeah, which I was going to ask you about this.
It's a community of 250 families across the UK. And we're constantly kind of asking, you know, what's important? You know, what's important to you? And we have an approach that we use called the feed states rather than the need states. So breaking down the different age groups of kids to understand actually what is really important to you. Because although it's great to have that awareness of health, also it's about balance. You know, you've got kids, that it has to be a balancing act. It's not all going to be healthy.
Yeah.
But what are the things that are really, really important to you that are kind of your non-negotiables, and what are the things that you're willing to kind of have a little bit of slack on, perhaps if you're on holiday or if you're out and about. And we learn a lot from the panel in that way, because I think it's really important. The approach to food is something that's very personal on a family-to-family basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for various economic reasons or cultural reasons. So we really work with our community to understand, okay, are the things that we're doing a reflection on what you want and a reflection on what's in the marketplace? And it helps kind of understand how we get that balance right within the range. And sometimes, you know, and we have within this a kids panel as well, that you get really honest feedback in as well.
Yeah.
Whether it's new packaging or a new flavor or something like that. And it's great, because if you can talk about health and you can talk about it in a fun, engaging way, then it becomes kind of part of your natural discussion rather than something that's like, okay, I'm going to talk about healthy food now.
Yeah, I can totally see that. What do you think the next 20 years is looking like? Not just for Pip Organic, but just the industry. What we're now all becoming far more aware, which is a great thing, for those who've been championing it, you know, since, was it 2011 you started? Or, you know, it's a long journey that you've been on. What do you think, is that just going to increase?
Definitely. I think where that increase and awareness is coming from is coming from the generation that we're seeing coming through now, probably, you know, coming back to your son's age, in terms of a real understanding of sustainability, a real understanding of environment, a real understanding of soil. You know, we're always going back to the soil, especially in organic farming principles, is it, you know, if we look after the soil from so many different aspects, it's a brilliant thing. And I think that understanding is growing. You know, we've had blips along the way, just as especially in the UK, where the organic sector has grown, and then we've had different crises along the way where it's stopped. But if you look globally, what's happening to the market, it is really going off the chart, especially in the States and in Europe. It really, really is just continuing to grow. It's taking up so much more market share. And that's, you know, without, I suppose, the spend of this new generation that is coming through, that is so aware of what we need to do for our environment. So what's the next 20 years? I think it's going to really be shaped by that spend coming through, and hopefully an understanding and a positive understanding around it as well.
Yeah, totally.
Dell Technologies are passionate champions of small businesses. They recognise that it can be a lonely road, and so they have the Dell Women's Entrepreneur Network, or DWEN for short, which is a worldwide community of over 100,000 female founders. They run free events and mentoring programmes and have a network of brilliant women all connecting and sharing insight. They also recognise that for many small businesses, visibility is one of the biggest challenges they face when trying to reach new customers. So each week, Dell give away their ad break space. So now I'm going to hand over to this week's winner of Dell's independent ad break.
Nobody ever changed the world in the wrong size bra or uncomfortable pants. Comfy undies are the foundation to feeling your best, confident self. And you're not the only one who feels lost without them. Globally, 1 in 10 girls misses up to 3 months of school due to not having underwear during their period. Which is why at U Underwear, we donate one pair for every pair you buy. We've helped improve over 15,700 lives since 2020, and we're on a mission to empower 33,000 women and girls by 2030. Find your perfect fit at youunderwear.com and help us change the world one pair of positive pants at a time.
Thank you, Del, for your support and generosity. If you'd like to find out more about Dwen and connect with brilliant and inspiring women, or you'd like to be in with a chance to have your very own ad break here on this series, head to holly.co/Del. Now, back to this week's conversation of inspiration.
Tell me, before I come to the end of this podcast and now ask about the roller coaster and your highs and lows on all of this, when you think back to when you were dreaming up this idea and you're now that many more years into this, is it everything that you had expected? Did you even know what to expect? When we think back to those pip, you know, the pip of your idea, and you think about all of this, I think that we can dream hugely, can't we? You know, there is big visions that happen, however naive we are. I mean, I was going to change the wreath entire industry. You know, this was a big dream here. I was going to become a billionaire with wreaths. You know, so you can have these big, big ideas, even from the pip of the idea when it starts. Has it lived up to what you have wanted to do?
Honestly, in terms of what we believed it would be, we didn't think it might take this long, mm-hmm. to terms of getting maybe the idea through to people.
Yeah.
I think, yes, we can blame lots of different things, but we maybe didn't think that there were going to be that many barriers. We've overcome a lot of them. We haven't overcome all of them. I think in terms of our where we are stocked as well, maybe we're not as available to as many people. So we might not have seen the growth at some points. However, our growth has been phenomenal, but we are 85% out of home business, meaning that obviously something like a COVID where that stops you in your tracks, you're left with less than 15% of our business. But there are challenges like that that hit all of us involved in businesses. It's not just us. I think so much of it has delivered on what we wanted to deliver, which is so, so rewarding. And I think the bits that we haven't quite fulfilled yet, it means that we are still have those opportunities and we have those challenges that we can still go after. So it keeps us hungry.
It keeps that energy that we were talking about earlier.
Absolutely.
So Karen, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's really interesting just listening to Patrick's response there, because I think that we sometimes, as founders of the business, fail to stop and look at what, you know, how the brand's grown and the opportunity, you know, and what we've done. I think that looking back and looking at where we are now, I'm so excited every day because I've got the opportunity to build something that I love and that I really believe that we're not compromising in, or if we have to make slight deviations because we're not happy about something, there's a plan, and it's you know, I find it really exciting, and I love it when I see a child with one of our products, or somebody makes a comment, or I see an Instagram post. So the highs on those might be, you know, everyday ones for us, because I think sometimes we don't sit back and celebrate as much because we can see so much that we need to do. So maybe we should start doing that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that I'm not being funny, but entrepreneurship is just a very frustrating game because, you know, ultimately it's never fast enough. Everyone and everything has to catch up to your vision of what could be if everyone just listened and did what you told them to do. That's not in your team. It's like in the bigger world, because we've got a different vision that's normally better than other people's. And so it's a very frustrating game, so to speak, but it is a game ultimately, and it keeps you on your toes and excited about what the next thing in. How are you going to come through the back door there? How are you going going to, you know, what opportunity can I grab? How can I change the future in the next 24 hours? It's in a quite an addictive thing. Mm. And I can imagine that the highs and lows, as you said, have been enormous, especially with COVID and things. But again, if you can get through those lows, and I'm sure you say the same, it's those lows that almost create the highs. Because the lessons that we learn, it's like we go through an MBA every single time we have a low, isn't it? Whether we like it or not, we're sat in that chair and someone's told you, right, you're going to learn something now. And you're like, hang on a second, I just learned something last week. I really could just do with a good stretch. So tell me, Patrick, Karen, if I come to the end of this podcast and I always use the analogy about roller coasters, and you've alluded to it, the highs and the lows. So tell me, both of you, whether you'd have joint highs and lows, whether you'd have separate ones, but what would be your greatest low so far on this journey?
One of the things we've done in our business is we've talked about capping our highs and bottoming our lows. And maybe that's the reason we might not celebrate as much as what, you know, we've just been chatting about. Sometimes we don't look back, or we don't celebrate some of those highs. We've had so many lows. Karen's going to go on to one in a second. But one of the things that we do is this bottoming out. So it's trying to forget about the negatives, unless you can learn from them. Mm-hmm. And focus on the positives in the business, and focus on driving through. So from a low perspective, that's what we do. And in terms of highs in our business, I think for me, the high from a business perspective is the ability and what our team showed through COVID. And I'm sure you hear this time in, time out, but I mentioned it earlier on that we had 85% of our business close its doors. And I think the grit and determination and teamwork that came through that period for, you know, what ended up to be the 18 months or so, turned us into a far superior business than what we went into COVID.
Wow.
The team grew so much, the ability for us to switch certain of the ways that we worked. You know, we talked about bridges and partnerships and friends as opposed to contacts earlier on, but one of the real strengths that we found that we came out of COVID was the bridges we had built on the way with our growers. Those bridges weren't just about for going forward. They were also about coming back, and the ability of us working together and showing those true partnerships. I think that, to me, is an absolute highlight, you know, and high in our business, in our business journey. And we, you know, really demonstrated the entrepreneurial spirit of our team. It demonstrated the hustle that we were talking about, and certainly the PIP hustle came through tremendously. And certainly it wasn't a single moment in that. It was such a proud period, even though it was so difficult. And the way we came out the other side, and we sort of picked up all but one of our customers again.
Wow!
Which again was a huge achievement for a team. You know, everyone going out there and finding it and working it, and the brand.
Fantastic. And Karen?
You know, as we said before, there have been several lows, but some of them you can reflect back on and feel slightly warmer about. And this one in particular, I think, was when we were first moving into the ice lolly market, and we'd worked really hard. And we were producing an ice lolly that was a rainbow ice lolly, which is 95% fruit.
So your son did get his wish, but just in a different way.
He got it in a lolly. Lolly. Yeah.
There you go. Mom and Dad always do try, yeah. Darling, to do this.
So yeah, it has a little bit of cheeky veg hidden in it, which is quite a challenge when you're actually producing a nice lolly. And we worked to the bone. We worked on the packaging. You know, it was very, very difficult to produce. Patrick was on the production line on my birthday. Everything changed. Had to work really hard on the production line. Couldn't get back in time for my birthday celebrations. Haven't forgiven him for that. But with all of that, and we had a really strict deadline with a customer, and it was all done. Everyone was happy with the result. Went into the truck, and they forgot to put the freezer unit on the truck. So when it arrived to us for distribution, it was just a wash of rainbow juice in the bottom of the truck, unfortunately.
My goodness.
And unfortunately, there wasn't much we could do about that, because it was a physical switch that was put on there. Luckily, we did have some additional stock produced and in storage. But I think, you know, we as a business don't ever take anything for granted. Yeah. And I think at this point we thought, no, it was fine. Yeah, yeah. Everything's done.
What could go wrong?
Getting there on time. It's, you know, what could go wrong? That was something that it's when we talk at schools and talk to children about, you know, producing products, that's the story that they all love, because it's like, what? There's juice all over the ground.
Yeah, I just, it's one of those stories. It's actually just turned my stomach. But it's just that thing where you go, this time I absolutely can say it's in, it's bagged, this is done. And somehow still that can happen. I don't even want to think about the delivery driver not putting on the switch. And when I just, that whole moment sends shivers down my spine, the awkwardness of or what happened there. So let's just move on from that. But my God, and the high, Karen, what would be, if you're sitting in a roller coaster, you've got your Pip organic drink in your hand, the wind's in your hair, what would be a high?
You know, a high for me is, it actually happened quite recently, and it has happened in the past, is when you see a store or a cafe or an environment and you think, wow, that would be an amazing Pip environment. And you see, you know, you think, right, this is great. And you walk in and you're just about to do your sales pitch to find out who's going to buy the product. And you see the product in the freezer, yeah, or on the shelf or in the fridge already. And it's like, wow, okay, that's great. You know, that somebody's had the confidence to buy this and put it on without us even marketing to them. And for me, I just love that.
Yeah.
I really, and I know the team love that as well. They just feel that it's something that is just really, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah, it's out. It's beyond you guys. It's happening. It's out there.
Yeah.
This has been just such an amazing, wonderful conversation with both of you. I've enjoyed it so much. And I know that so many people get so much out of it because you've shared the steps of how this brand has been built and your vision to what it will be and where we're going. And I've just loved everything about it. Can I ask you now both, we haven't had a double letter for a long time, actually. So I'm looking forward to this. This is the moment where both of you have written a letter to your younger selves. And I don't know what you're going to say, but I do know that I thank you for sharing a little bit of your soul with us. So Karen, over to you.
Thank you. Dear Karen, oh my goodness, I wish I could give you a hug right now. You're keeping your dreams to yourself because you're so confused, but that's okay. You think everyone around you seems to know what they want, but you really don't at this point. Most people feel the same, but have more bravado or confidence than you do at your age. However, you were right to be unsure, because what you don't appreciate is that over the next 30 years, times really do change and it's totally okay to reinvent yourself. You do not need to pigeonhole yourself early, so try and enjoy the journey. In fact, this is just the beginning of achieving your dreams of owning your own business, gaining confidence to take entrepreneurial leaps and eventually create a household brand that many families will know and love. For a teenager, you have a lot of grit and you are willing and very keen to learn everything to improve and respond to a challenge. Looking back, I think that's what you really love. I admire your determination to learn from the most mundane tasks so that you are prepared, because you think you never want to miss up on an opportunity. You won't realize it now, but this want is a bit of your superpower. The nuggets you learn from building experience and listening to others will help you so much in the future. For many years, you'll be the youngest, the only female, and the least qualified person in the room. Sometimes this really frustrates you, but most of the time it drives you. By being focused, you listened and you learned that you didn't need to be the loudest in the room. I remember your idea being dismissed by a colleague in a really important meeting when you were 22 and you felt overlooked. That evening, you went home and you cried to your dad that you wished you were 27 and then everybody would listen. He laughed and told you to slow down a bit and then reminded you of this when you were in your 40s, when perhaps you did want to look 22 again. This experience, however, flicked a switch in you and shaped you and how you think and how you're in your own race and your own ideas and thoughts are worthy. Then a chance meeting introduces you to your next mentor, and you will learn that it's okay to stumble into things. You'll work incredibly hard, travel, make a lot of memories, have a lot of highs, a lot of lows, but you wouldn't change it for the world. You will jump at every opportunity, even if sometimes it'll feel like you don't deserve a place at the table. But you do, and we'll later hear the term imposter syndrome, and you'll totally get it. In the future, you will look for grit in people over ego. Say yes to all invitations. One of these invitations that you didn't really want to go to, you'll meet Patrick. And totally out of the blue, you'll meet your person. He has grit, humor, integrity, and likes to dance. He is the extrovert to your introvert. Your values are really similar, and you start a professional and personal journey together. Together, you will share many ups and downs, balancing happiness with grief, sickness, and times that are really pretty damn fantastic. You'll be a resilient couple that support each other with amazing family and friends. You have kids a little later than some of your friends, but they're worth the wait. You'll make a great team with Patrick, balancing and juggling work, kids, family, and friends. And if anyone says to you this is easy, it isn't. But sometimes, just sometimes, you have to try to do your best. You will look at your parents with a deep respect now and how they managed four kids and both worked full time. As we navigate being parents, we try and we instill that our wonderful families give us and surround them with fairness and love. You will find it so rewarding, and you will love and the love you feel for your family, I cannot write down in words for you today. So, Karen, heads up, listen hard, take a place at the table, and continue to be kind to all. Cherish your family and friends, as they will be with you for the twists and turns of life. And finally, your brothers were right. The corkscrew perm didn't suit you. Good luck, and above all else, enjoy yourself.
Thank you, Karen. I'm so glad you have a seat at the table.
Thank you.
And Patrick, over to you.
Hello, little Patrick. Get ready for it. It's going to be a fun ride and one you will never stop loving. Even though you'll grow up in a male-dominated world, you will have two grannies guiding the family who will shape your future as you learn some of your most valuable lessons and values from them. Totally contrasting, they will teach you the strength of determination, the joy of fun, the force of nature, the beauty of fairness, the love of family, the capacity of kindness, and the potential of opportunity. Through your parents, this female leadership trait will continue alongside probably the hardest working person you will ever know. These values will be amplified as they form part of your everyday life as you watch and learn from them as you grow up. Trust yourself, and you will learn that if you focus on something, you will succeed. And have faith in your own patience. This will allow you to experience greatly as you grow up, and when opportunities present themselves, grab them with both hands. Embrace life on the coast, as this will plant the seed for your love of the ocean, spending some of your happiest moments during your childhood and life ahead. Cherish the opportunity of grandparent farming life to understand the land as well. Your curiosity in this world will ultimately lead you to continue your entrepreneurial adventures by finding a purposeful way back to work with nature. Younger life will be fun-filled with determination, resulting in achieving your goals, although opportunity or distraction frustrates some of the people close to you. Strict discipline will enter your life at the perfect time via military service, and although you initially reject it, your values guide you to embrace it, overcome barriers, and deliver some of your greatest personal achievements. These learnings will guide you through your late teens and set you on the road to focused, resilient independence. And although you thought you were resistant to change, it is something you actually embrace and thrive on. This independence and impatience allows you to change direction and study in order to complete these as quickly as possible and move to your next opportunity. And this fast tracks your ambition to explore the world and leads to your arrival in London. But as you start to explore your next opportunity, the love gods have different ideas with your plans and and your plans are frozen in their tracks. Totally unexpectedly, your life is turned upside down and you will face the greatest challenge to date, convincing your future life partner, bestie, soulmate, business partner, superstar mother of your kids, and your moral compass that she should join you on a round-the-world adventure. Do not give up. Your perseverance will pay off, and you will start the next exciting chapter of your life, where 1 + 1 = considerably more than 2. Lucky for you. You will become a far more enriched person with this inspirational female leader guiding you, and you will seek out opportunities, focus on goals, have fun, and constantly learn. These learnings will lead you back to your roots within the natural world. And some of your friends will be surprised on what you're embarking on, but your belief in nature and organic agriculture will inspire you. So have faith in your decisions. Guided by your aligned values, you and Karen will start a rollercoaster journey in life and business together. Patrick, enjoy the journey and remember, the darkest hour is the hour before dawn, so never give up. You will have fun trying to achieve more goals. You will have more fun continually learning, and you'll have the most fun starting your family with Karen. And always remember, life will sometimes give you lemons, but lucky you, you can make a pip lemonade.
You know what I thought? I thought that's just love letters to each other.
Aww.
It was really, really beautiful. And, you know, when I think about what you've grown and, you know, we've had an hour here, but, you know, the story and the lows and the trying to grow a family, trying to grow a business, the knocks, the everything, but that you can, after that many years, tell your story and your love of each other is a really beautiful thing. It's one of the things that I think is, if you can find a life partner, a business partner combined, I can only imagine how wonderful it is. Maybe not at 7 a.m. when you're trying to get the kids to school and you need to talk about what's going on in the office. But that really, really touched me. And I think with that stability in your lives and in your business, you know, the world is your oyster, a pip growing into an oak tree. And so I wish you both everything. And you've totally warmed our hearts and you've got glassy eyes everywhere listening. So thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, Holly. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you for joining me today. If you've enjoyed this episode, can I ask that you share it with a friend and like, subscribe and review it too, so that together we can inspire even more people to follow their dreams to build a life they love.